yellow metal.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the Morning Open, a look at the economy as trading gets underway following a long holiday weekend. Gold is glittering, the U.S. gets bumped, and water wars down south? What about all that hospitality? All that ahead, but first, where's Wall Street? Numbers are up right now for the S&P, up about 0.6%, 0.5% for the NASDAQ, and the Dow up about 0.4% at 94.81. European shares up right now as well, mainly under 1%, and in Asia, stocks closed mostly higher. The price of gold topped $1,000 an ounce today, only third time in history it's done that. Let's talk about it with Julie Nieman. She's an analyst at Smith Moore & Company. She joins us live from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
So gold is often seen as the safe place to invest in times of volatility. We saw gold go above 1,000 in the spring of last year, and we know what happened after that. So are we seeing the same thing now?
It's pretty much a replay. We're looking at a declining dollar here, and gold has always been a hedge against inflation. Now, we don't have that right now. In fact, we have deflation, but there's great fear that all these budget deficits are going to be causing inflation in the future. It's reflecting that. And then the fear factor, too. It's a safe haven from political and economic turmoil, and it's the only universally tradable commodity considered to be a storehouse of value. So you've got both of those things going on right now.
But then there's, Julie, some optimism this morning on Wall Street. We noted that the numbers are up. Some analysts are pointing to merger activity. Is that generating some confidence there?
Well, it is, because in spite of market run-up, there's still values out there. All those with cash have been sifting through the market trash, finding some buried treasure. Now, most of the acquisitions we're seeing right now are bolt-ons. These work. They don't pay too much. They fit in perfectly with existing businesses. They're buying divisions instead of all companies. But you have to be really aware of mega mergers. It takes 3 to 5 years for them to work. You've got different cultures, frightening, discovering phase of just what did we buy. Banks are really good examples of that. They never are creative that do never create value for shareholders. Banks always pay too much for competitors and can't bolt them on easily. So why do they do it? It's very simple. Bigger salaries for the CEOs. But these bolt-on kinds of acquisitions that we're hearing about this morning are the kind that work, and the price is cheap.
Yeah, the Kraft-Cadbury thing that where Cadbury rejected, sure. All right. Julie Nieman joining us from St. Louis. Julie, thanks.
You bet.
We appreciate it. Congress comes back to Washington this week, and Marketplace's Steve Henn has a look at what's on the agenda there.
Every September, when Congress comes back to town, the traffic gets worse, lobbyists flood back, and cabbies like Charles Hewitt rejoice. The long, hot summer is finally over.
There's nobody to go to restaurants or anything that requires people. They're gone.
It's been a sticky month for lawmakers, too, but now it's back to work. They have to finish next year's budget, not to mention tackling health care.
I don't think we're going to see any action beyond the annual spending bills in health care.
A.B. Stoddard covers the Capitol for the Hill newspaper. She says health care is quickly becoming the issue that's eating the rest of the Democrats' agenda. Remember global warming legislation and regulatory reform for Wall Street?
I don't see that coming up in the remainder of 2009. I think it'll be health care and just the usual business.
And unless President Obama finds a way to slice through the gridlock, every other issue could end up stuck in traffic. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Well, Congress will be greeted by newspaper ads blasting President Obama's proposal for a consumer financial protection agency. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce thinks such an operation represents too much government intrusion in the banking system. Marketplace's John Dimsdale joins us from our Washington bureau to tell us more. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Steve.
So tell us about these ads.
Well, you don't see anything about banks or insurance companies because, remember, they're not very popular right now. What you do see is a picture of a butcher with the line of text that the proposed consumer protection agency will even intrude into the kinds of credit that your local butcher might extend to you. These ads, which the Wall Street Journal says are costing the chamber $2 million, try to bring home to consumers that the protection agency could have the power to regulate very small loans, like what you'd get at a local store.
So, John, why is the Chamber of Commerce and really the whole financial industry opposed to an agency that protects consumers?
Yeah, they don't want a powerful government agency rejecting what could be innovative new financial products or insurance policies that could help people afford homes or cars or anything that they need to borrow money for. But the supporters of the consumer agency say banks and insurance companies have lured unsophisticated customers into exotic and complicated loans or investments. And these consumers need regulations that would make the terms and repayment conditions more clear. So there are going to be hearings into this consumer agency in the House of Representatives later this month.
All right. The debate continues. Marketplace's John Dimsdale in Washington. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
A new quarterly survey out today confirms U.S. employers are cautious about adding jobs. The employment company Manpower surveyed 72,000 employers around the world, showing hiring intentions for the fourth quarter dipped slightly in the United States, while improving in many areas in Europe and Asia. Of 13 U.S. industry sectors, only employers in education and health services were more positive about hiring prospects than they were for the third quarter. Well, the United States has been bumped as the world's most competitive economy. The World Economic Forum Global Competitiveness Report out today says the winner is Switzerland. Yeah, home of chocolate and watches. The U.S. lost its top standing mostly because of the financial crisis and deficits. Singapore came in third. Listening to the Morning Report for Tuesday, September 8th, 2009 at Marketplace.org. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad shows no sign of moderating his hardline nuclear policies. The United Nations has given him until the end of the month to stop enriching uranium, and Iran could now face yet another set of sanctions. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
The UN has already imposed three sets of sanctions on Iran. They've all proved ineffective. But the US and its allies are now planning the most powerful measure so far. They want to target Iran's gas imports. Because of its own shortage of refineries, Iran has to import around 40% of the petroleum it needs. Hindering those supplies will cause real harm, says Mohammed Shakil of the Economist Intelligence Unit.
These sanctions, if and when they are passed, and they are very likely to be passed now, will hurt Iran dramatically. Iran's economy is going to suffer.
He says the price of gasoline will shoot up, making transport and electricity much more expensive for millions of Iranians. But he believes the Iranian regime will try to unite the population by blaming the price hikes on America. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Later in the week on Thursday, the Council of Economic Advisers releases its estimates of how many jobs were created or saved by President Obama's economic stimulus package. The first road project funded through the package is just about finished. All summer, Tamara Keith's been tracking the repaving of New Hampshire Avenue just outside of Washington, D.C. And this morning, she filed this update.
It's 11 o'clock at night, and Tim Riddell is operating a skid loader. He scoops up piles of blacktop left behind by a big yellow milling machine that's grinding off several inches of cracked and potholed asphalt.
We're cleaning everything up, sweeping the road off clean, and the paving crew is coming behind us and putting a skim coat on it.
It wasn't long ago that Riddell worried he'd be out of work this summer. Instead, he's been busier than ever, logging lots of overtime on this and another stimulus project. He's paid off all his bills and is just back from a week-long vacation. He took his two daughters to Ocean City, Maryland.
My grandparents live down there. And luckily, you know, I've been working enough. I had some money so we could go out and do a lot of fun stuff down there.
They went to the beach, played miniature golf, and rode the rides at the Jolly Roger Amusement Park.
They had a blast.
Riddell's stimulus project paycheck provided Ocean City with a little economic stimulus of its own. At the Jolly Roger, General Manager Stephen Pastisak says business here has been slower than usual, but decent.
Maybe they don't do the water park every day. They do that one day, do the beach the next day, and then, say, do miniature golf. They spread it out a little bit more instead of spending a lot of money on things.
Ocean City's mayor has been trying to entice vacationers like Tim Riddell with radio ads like this one.
Hi, this is Rick Meehan, mayor of Ocean City, Maryland. A lot of folks are tightening their belts this summer, but I'm here to say there's still time to book a great vacation without spending a lot.
Mayor Meehan says it looks like business in this tourist town is holding steady this year, despite the recession.
We've increased the number of day trippers, maybe just like the family you talked about, but while they're here,
they are going out and spending money. They are buying their French fries. They are buying their popcorn. And if everybody buys a little bit less, but there's a few more people buying, the numbers are about the same.
In this economy, not losing is the new winning. In Ocean City, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
One of the few areas in the world that's seeing economic growth is the Israeli-occupied West Bank. GDP, gross domestic product there, is expected to rise 5% this year. That's partly because Israel has removed some checkpoints and allowed Israeli Arabs to come in and shop. From the West Bank city of Nablus, Michael May reports on the possibilities of growth and the limitations.
Posters honoring Palestinian suicide bombers still line the walls of the ancient city of Nablus, but the posters are faded and torn. Now the streets are teeming with traders selling everything from baklava to yo-yos. Tala Nasser hawks flashy t-shirts and jeans. He says business has doubled in the past couple months.
This day is good, yeah. You know, because the checkpoint is open and the people come here every day. Yeah, from Israel, from everywhere, from Palestine, you know. A lot of people, every day, yeah.
Despite the changes, the West Bank still has an unemployment rate of 16%. And some Palestinian businessmen say it's going to take more than opening checkpoints to create a thriving economy.
I don't think it's a big step. It's a step.
Ziad Anabtawi is a major importer and exporter of vegetable oils. That's a huge empty tank. It's meant to hold olive oil. Anabtawi says business is much better than it was a few years ago, but still down 25% from 2000.
If you don't have a relaxed political environment, there is no way you can have a serious growth of the economy. What we witnessed in the past couple of years is a recovering of a very bad situation.
He says it's still hard to find good employees since many of the best and brightest left out of despair. Foreign investment is still virtually non-existent unless you count aid money. And security at the borders can make it prohibitively expensive to export goods. He says it costs $1,000 just to get a shipping container across the border.
The less security measures, the more peace we have, the more efficient we become.
Efficiency is good, but new markets will have to wait until Israel isn't worried about bombs and the olive oil. Anabtawi says a peace deal is the only thing that will spur real growth. He's banking on the United States to bring the two sides back to the negotiating table this year. In Nablus, I'm Michael May for Marketplace.
So Atlanta's been called the capital of the New South. It's home to companies such as Coca-Cola, Delta Airlines, and the Home Depot. And its metropolitan population has more than doubled since 1980. But neighboring states say Atlanta's use of a vital water source is draining. From station WBHM in Birmingham, Tanya Ott reports.
For nearly two decades, Georgia, Florida, and Alabama have fought over how much water Atlanta can drain from nearby Lake Lanier to fuel its sprawling metro area. Critics say there may not be enough water downstream to cool power plants in Alabama or protect oyster beds in Florida. It's a tri-state water war and a war of words. Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue says he'll fight to the death in what Alabama Governor Bob Riley calls Atlanta's massive illegal water grab. Charles Krautler, director of the Atlanta Regional Commission, says the other states may just be jealous of Atlanta's economy.
I think that there has been a perception that if there is some mechanism that limits Atlanta's future growth, that might open opportunities for other areas.
But Cindy Lowry of the environmental group Alabama Rivers Alliance says she doesn't know why anyone would be jealous of Atlanta's growth.
It provides a lot of challenges environmentally, economically, and in all sorts of ways.
In July, a federal judge ruled that Atlanta was not authorized to take drinking water from Lake Lanier. If the three states don't come to an agreement, Congress may step in, and that makes this an issue for everyone, not just the South. There are similar reservoirs in 27 other states. In Birmingham, Alabama,
I'm Tanya Ott for Marketplace.
And finally, the government on the tiny South Pacific island of Samoa has instituted driving on the left side of the road. They did it to be in line with big neighbors Australia and New Zealand and to prevent people from buying big, bulky, gas-guzzling cars that Americans drive on the other side. Yesterday was a holiday on the island to give people a chance to practice. By the way, bars are closed all week. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great Tuesday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.